You insisted that I took it with me. In the rain, a box that belonged to your father that he gave to me. I protested. I think that he meant for you to keep it regardless. No, you placed it in the boot with the other boxes, full of books, full of ideas. I forgot that the box existed. In the hot press, it smoldered for these last 2 years, until today, on the move again. I repacked my belongings in more boxes, into my friends' cars, into my new dwelling. Alone again, like you said. I was okay until I found your father's box in the hot press and had a look. I made a cup of tea and pulled a cap from the top. Hemingway, Joyce, Wolfe, Lawrence, and Huxley, among others. Yellow Penguin paperbacks from the 60s. I opened Men Without Women. Two photographs fell onto the floor. You in the ring, Kerry, about 5 months heavy with a small fella, I'd say, and me, naked, reading that very copy of Men Without Women on our bed in our first flat. I pulled out Ulysses. It was bookmarked several times over. Cinema stubs, postcards, love letters, shopping lists, email, more photographs, Dublin, Connemara, Cork, Paris, and you, 22, addressed. I pulled each bookmark from the pages like teeth from my mouth. You insisted, I understood. Lady Chatterley spat an SD card out of my feet. That video we made when we were drunk. Your idea and you played up, and I played it on my laptop. I watched you come, and you taking me in your mouth, while I fed on the strange alcove of your body. On the street outside, the sounds of traffic and dogs barking coalesced with the sounds of our coupling, and the clouds slowly emptied themselves onto pedestrians, hoping someday that something might grow, or maybe settle. I left the box out in the footpath in the fog.
Very good. Next up, we'll have Cullum Scully, please.
I hope this is disappointing to offend anyone, especially anyone from England. But, it's not meant to be anti-English, per se. It's meant to be anti-war, but it was interesting. Harry, the first poem he read was about Cork and the end of the 19th century, and about the soldiers and set off to war. So I suppose it's interesting that I suppose it's still happening. And then when I was over in England there before Christmas in November, it was coming up to Memorial Day, and everybody seemed to be wearing poppies all of the time. And on TV they were all wearing it, and it was kind of almost as if they had to wear them. You know, there was a number of Irish personalities on the British television, and they were obliged to wear them. So I know the poppy is meant to be a symbol of peace, but I suppose it didn't ring true for me. And I suppose I know militarism is very much part of British history and our own history as well, but this is just a poem I wrote about it, and it's kind of written from the point of view of a minor British politician or a local politician. It's called Let's Keep Those Memories Coming. War rocks. Let's keep those memories coming. We'll plant more gardens, grow more trees. Those cenotaphs look lovely in the summer. Music lilting over from the bandstand, and poppies black and red along the borders. We'll grow so many, everyone can wear one in every season to support the boys. Yes, you two, Paddy, on the telly, tossing the mic in front of you on match tonight. Your granddad almost headed for the trenches after a wholesome supper of drasheen. It's best you wear one too. How about a cathedral? If only those Pashtuns had long-range bombs. They could blow up that one in Warwick. It's never used much anyway. Then we could build a new church, fantastic stanchions, pillars to the sky. What a memorial that would be. We'd never then forget our fallen dead. We need to keep them coming though, these wars. Spread them out a little. Some long-forgotten islands maybe next. We need to make more medals for the prince's chest. The girls should get some too, equality and all that. It's only fair. He does look well with sword drawn at those memorial parades. We'll grow a little forest for all the lads who fell, a tree and plaque each. I know they will be chuffed. Those boys love war and fighting and all that. They do love going, and we just love remembering them at home.
Fair play. Next up, we have Stephanie Brennan, please.
This poem is a bit of fun with music. Aspects of Jane, after Leonard, Lloyd, and traditional. Jane is a hairdresser, hoarding locks of hair, quickly given keepsakes from men going clear. Jane in her turtleneck, walking in the rain, accompanied by Jesus and her brand new friend. Jane lying in labour for a full 9 days. Henry killed his queens in many different ways.
Next we'll have Rab Urquhart, please.
Story. The last book. Flashes in the sky, explosions and small arms fire fading. People enter the square from all directions, walking wounded and victorious fighters, weary yet light of step. Thrust to the dais and adopting democratic demeanour, Dennehy addresses the assembled. Comrades, the revolution is over and we've won. Great shouts from the crowd. Comrades, the old knowledge is decadent and corrupt. We must cleanse ourselves and begin anew. Burn the books, smash the library. Burn the books, smash the library. Riotous destruction ensues, and time passes. Sky ablaze, reports, bursts, automatic weapon fusillades fade. The crowd descend upon a central square, milling together, packing available space, slogans and cheers. Let loose at the lectern, Doherty dictates to them. The enemy is defeated and we are the victors. Roars of approval. The foreigners have poisoned our culture with their alien ideology. We must wipe clean the slate and begin again. Smash the library, burn the books. Smash the library, burn the books. Mob demolition begins, and yet time passes. Chak to Zug, Chak to Zug, come in, sir. Go ahead, Major. Yes, Captain, we've arrived on the surface of the blue planet. Sir, our sensors are picking up traces of acute mental activity in this location. Skung. Chak's sensor pulses. Captain, it seems that this was once the site of a library. What were these humans about? Imagine burning books and levelling libraries. It's no wonder they all died of stupidity. Major, Major, over here, sir. I found something. It's a... What, Krupa? What is it? I think it's a book, sir.
A book?
Why, quick, let's see. It is. It is a book. Well done, Krupa. This book will tell us all we'll ever know about the lives of the people who lived on this planet. What book is it, sir? It's called Peg Sayers. Very good, crew pair B. Beam us up.
Next up, we'll have a new prior, please.
I'd rather be Robert Plant. I want to be Robert Plant in 1973. Long hair, bare chest, tight jeans, gripping the mic stand like it's the only thing holding me up. I want to wake up in a late afternoon hotel room to a carpet of beautiful groupies, passed out, from the exhaustion of attempting to satiate my desires. But I am a 33-year-old woman, and people ask me when I'm going to get a real job. They enthusiastically suggest I get a HDIP, say I could become a captain of my captain to disenchanted adolescents and somehow reach them through the medium of a state-set syllabus. I would rather be Kurt Cobain in 1993, screaming my angst out to the world, thrashing perfectly good guitars. I want to dive from the stage into a sea of affinity, let their hands carry me above their heads, a crashing wave, all the way around some dingy venue. But I'm a 33-year-old woman, and people ask me when I'm going to grow up and settle down. Marriage, they say, serves an important social function. Best get a mortgage, get married, take someone's name before all the good ones are snatched up. I would rather be Jim Morrison than 1967. I want to feel that moment when every voice, every note, every beat, every choice each member of the band has ever made fuses in sublime synergy. Time ceases and I feel divinity flowing through my veins. Music spills through the crowd, sweeping their spirits up in a maelstrom of unity. But I'm a 33-year-old woman, and people ask me when I'm going to have babies. They advise me not to leave it too late, warn me of impending wrinkles, sagging breasts, grey hairs, and the biological tick-tock. They say I should create people to keep me company in old age. I would rather be Jimi Hendrix. When I die, let the world grieve and declare what an untimely and tragic waste of talent it was. Let it be from mistaking my heroin for cocaine, choking on whiskey vomit, attempting to fly off a cliff on a desert acid trip. Let me die from cheeseburgers and prescriptions. Let my death be a mystery in the bathtub. Let it be from the inability of a soul as sensitive as mine to survive in this world. But I am a 33-year-old woman. Still, I'd rather be Elvis.
Thanks very much. And next up we have Julie P, please.
Purpose. Feeling disconnected from the world and neglected by myself, I lay motionless and warm. Diving deep down into an imaginative lair, I feel safe and awake, like a plank of wood cut from a grandfather tree and put to good use in a bench by a lake where thoughts would gather and leaves would fall. Beneath the mattress of a double bed on which lovers would climb atop one another, purring and moaning to a creaky rhythm. Along the length of a table where elbows could rest as families would eat and grow. Along the spine of a nave oak, dancing with the waves, purposeful and powerful. Along a library wall, housing words and books, surrounded by an intellectual glow and strong silence. Or as a branch in a coffin, an economical tomb, housing bones and possessions and otherworldly woo.
Thank you very much. And next up, we'll have Grace O'Donoghue, please.
I wrote this poem for two friends of mine that got engaged recently. I was thinking of painting, so I want to give them as an engagement present. And kind of sparked this poem, and I suppose I just want to hear it out loud tonight because I'm just struggling with it being the first non-cynical thing I've ever written. I made you a painting. And I didn't know why. I chose the layers, the sticky, the colours. I just knew it had to be for you. It made me think about the layers of shared life, constantly renewed and reviewed. The yearly count up, what will we leave? What will we cover up? What needs a fresh coat? What makes us happy? Only these we will keep. The now conversations and decisions make for a spectacular union between lovers in search of life's rarest sweet. Some of us are lucky enough to have been struck by lightning. Very few of us are wise enough to catch hold of the striking beam and harness it into first diamond and then gold rings. Gold rings being the start of a life of sparks, lightning and magic shared between two earthly hearts. The layers, the stickiness, the rejuvenation and the warm fuzzy conversations. I wish you a shared life of waking dreams, mundane, everyday little things. I wish you a shared life of luminous arrows and lightning moons.
Thank you very much. And next up, the Mary O'Connell, please.
This is about somebody who realizes and hears bad news about an illness that's not going to be cured. It's called Hearing the Worst. When the drapes are drawn around the bed again, your stomach gives an unfamiliar lurch. Out in the ward, a nurse checks a list, a loud guffaw along the corridor. Life carries on, but for you, it has stopped. The hushed tones that comfort you now fill you with rage. They expect you to turn your face to the wall. You refuse. Decide to become the best you can be at the height of your beauty and grace. Hold the lavender hours you hitched to Marseille, letting rock water silken your skin. Recapture the days when southern light pitched down to break open the pines and scatter their scent on the floor. Times you flung wide the shutters of an inn, heard far below the thundering of waves, when the smell of bacon crisping on the grill drove you to shake the one you love awake and savor the sharpness of the hour. Dostoevsky's ledge over his brooding waves, a place he chose to spend 1,000 years, even in darkness, rather than let go, has etched its image on your will. To stretch your arms and hug what life remains. Thank you.
So we're down to the last two people now on the open mic. So we've got Daniel.
David?
Yeah, sorry. David Barton, is it?
Jordan.
Sorry, I just couldn't read that there. Sorry about that.
Get it right.
David Jordan.
This is a poem about James Joyce's Dubliners. Close to perfection, this word magic, alchemy of the word, this complete world spinning, wrapped in its grey urban ambience, softly singing, so fresh, so clear and fresh like a soft spring, and characters that come to life. These characters are the undead. They will never die. And always they will bring the ecstasy of instant recognition. Yes, when every story hits the spot, when every line glows and sings, you know you're in dear, dirty Dublin.
Thanks very much. Is that your first time reading her a little bit? Very good.
Well
hoping to see you again. And to finish up the evening then, we'll have Patricia Watts, please.
It's called Never Forgive Me. Never forgive me, I'm still so alone. And nothing's rising till my walk in vain, regardless. unchained, unindependent, overstrained. I know not my own mind, it's all disjointed. There are many versions, hypothesized, each giving a right answer. How do you know me? How can you understand the happy disposition that goes with nature? I don't drink anymore and vow never to smoke. Outside there is danger, so gracious, so cold. Holding doors open and paying for drinks are all on the table. I do not wish, in any big way, you would finally crawl away and back to me, you call the poisoned dish. Let your Christianized spirit lay the table. No offence to you and yours, but let me desist. One here is a poison chalice, and mind, how you look at her one twist of sweetness. She's off, you've done it, no need to remind any one of you how with the sperm of Satan she is. If her heart is acting up in such a way, avoid her. Kill her within the limits of law and spirit behind the guide of her sweetness.